He's Hacker.
I like a good serial killer documentary. He hasn't taken the pounding that wide receivers take.
It's just a pound job, and guys are tired towards that 4 minutes.
And he doesn't shy away from opinion.
I would be lying to you if I said I had not heard things. They're like a bad rash. You hear a lot of things. Some are true, some aren't.
It's Hacker After Dark on 1010XL.
And a very good Tuesday evening to you, Jacksonville. It is Hacker After Dark, before dark today. In for Rick Ballew here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM with Dylan Denmark. The Hacker, Ryan Green, with you. Glad you are with us, as today is officially the 100-day mark since the Jaguars season came to an end. Trevor Lawrence met the media earlier today. Foye Oluokun met the media earlier today at the Jaguar voluntary offseason workout program. We have a pre-draft luncheon with Trent Baalke and Doug Peterson on Thursday that I will be at. And then we are a week from Thursday, 9 days away from the National Football League draft. The Jaguars have 8 selections in the draft, 5 of the top 116, including the 17th pick in round number 1. Guest lineup tonight, taking you up until 8 o'clock. Coming up in less than 20 minutes, Emory Hunt. You see him on CBS Sports HQ. He is the founder of Football Game Plan and the Football Game Plan Draft Guide. There are a lot of draft guides out there, a lot of good draft guides out there. I'm not sure if any is bigger or as comprehensive as Football Game Plan. Hundreds and hundreds of pages of information that Emory Hunt puts out there. He is an absolute encyclopedia when it comes to draft prospects. So we're going to have Emory on to get his thoughts on what the Jaguars did in free agency, how that'll translate to next week at the draft. And we'll obviously focus on the wide receiver position. We will focus on the defensive back position. And there are a couple of other positions of interest, I think, that I'm going to ask Emory Hunt about. I'll share those with you in just a moment. So Emory Hunt of Football Game Plan comes up in less than 20 minutes. At the top of the 7 o'clock hour tonight, David Steele, the longtime play-by-play voice on Bally Sports for the Orlando Magic. He will stop by as Orlando returns to the playoffs for the first time in 4 years. They have game 1 of the Eastern Conference first round on Saturday against the Cleveland Cavaliers. And David Steele, my buddy down in Orlando, longtime voice of the Magic, he will stop by at the top of the 7 o'clock hour. But we're glad you're with us here heading into a Tuesday evening. Every night here on Hacker After Dark, we do give you a big deal of the night. And Dylan Denmark. Let's do that right now.
Time now for the big deal of the night.
What's the big deal?
What is the big deal?
No big deal.
It is a big deal.
On Hacker After Dark.
100 days. 100. That is how long it's been since the Jaguar season came to an end unceremoniously in Nashville, Tennessee, capping off the worst late season collapse in franchise history. So I ask you, Jaguar fans all over the Northeast Florida area, have 100 days been enough? Have 100 days been enough time for you to get the collapse, as we've referred to it, out of your system? Are you ready to move on to the 2024 season? Are you excited about the free agent acquisitions? Are you excited about the draft coming up next week? Or has 100 days not been enough time and you're still aggravated, you're still upset, you're still PO'd, whatever you are about the Jaguars losing 5 out of 6 and becoming only the 6th team, number 6, 6th team since 2000 to start a season 8-3 and miss the postseason? To me, talking about it every night with you, the good men and women of Jacksonville, Florida, I'm over last season. I'm all about turning the page. To me, when free agency begins, that's really the turning of the page. Then the offseason program And then obviously the draft. And by the draft, by next Thursday night, when Roger Goodell takes that podium and says officially that the Chicago Bears are on the clock, you probably need to get over the collapse. If you still want to seethe about it for the next 9 or so days, I guess I give you my blessing. But has 100 days been enough time? I put that on Twitter earlier today because 100 days is a good landmark in the NFL offseason. At Ryan Green 1010XL for your viewing pleasure on social media, at Ryan Green 1010XL. Of the 200-plus votes I've received so far, 63% said they're on to next season, although 37%, a decent amount, 37% said, nope, 100 days has not been long enough. I'm still upset at losing 5 out of 6 and missing the NFL playoffs. Well, let's ask somebody that participated in 5 of those 6 games. In fact, the only game he did not play in, ironically enough, was the game the Jaguars won, beating Carolina, who by the end of the year, Carolina was nothing more than a high school football team. Trevor Lawrence met the media earlier today down at the Miller Electric Center, and he reflected upon a very disappointing 2023 campaign.
Yeah, it was obviously a disappointing season. I mean, some of the stuff that I said after the year, but I think just being removed from it, it's a lot easier to see the good after the fact, not necessarily the good things that happened, but use the bad things as good and to make yourself better moving forward. I mean, there's just so many things that I learned last season, whether it's, you know, trying to stay healthy and dealing with some things that I haven't had to deal with in my career, or not playing as consistent as I wanted to play and to finish the year, whatever it may be, maybe not meeting some expectations that we had for ourselves as a team, not playing well in big games, all these things that have gone through my head. I think you being removed from it, you can take stuff from that and use it to make you better. In the moment, it's hard to see the big picture. So I'm thankful for that.
Using that from last year and making you better. That's an interesting thought. Did they learn lessons in the loss to Cincinnati, the loss to Cleveland, the loss to Baltimore, certainly the loss to Tennessee? Unbelievably frustrating, right? You just go back through the memory banks. The AFC North did a number on you, man. Just an absolute number. Back to back to back. Cincinnati, Cleveland, Baltimore. Yikes. Of course, Tennessee as well was not good. And of course, that Tampa Bay game, I don't know what that was on Christmas Eve. That was embarrassing. Trevor Lawrence also was asked about using the end of the year, the end of the collapse, as fuel heading into 2024.
I mean, all the difficult times of my career, I mean, I think back to my rookie season, has made me a lot better for it. You just have to use it. So that's what I plan to do from last season. And I think that's our approach as a team too. It's a waste if you don't use it. You went through that experience and then you don't use it. It's double bad because it sucked going through it and then you didn't get better from it. So I think that's my mindset. That's our mindset moving forward, and so many things to learn from.
It's a much different roster than it was 100 days ago as well. Just off the top of your head, I mean, think about this for a second. Guys that are gone that were on the roster 100 days ago. Foley Fatakasi, Rayshon Jenkins, Darius Williams, Calvin Ridley, that's 4. Brandon McManus is 5. Kalavon Chaisson is 6. You got Jamal Agnew, 7. Trey Herndon, 8. DeJuan Smoot, 9. Tyler Shatley, 10. I mean, go on down the line of guys that dressed there in Week 18 that are no longer here. And you think of the new additions. Gabe Davis, Mitch Morse, Darnell Savage, Ronald Darby, Devin Duvernay, right? Joey Sly, Trevis Gibson, on and on and on and on and on. You got 10, 12 new free agents, Mac Jones via trade. You're going to add minimum 6, 7, 8 draft picks next week. You would think 5 or 6 minimum make the roster. So you're talking the 53 guys the Jaguars are going to suit up or have on the roster in the 1st of September, 17, 18 of them are going to be new. It's a third of the roster. It's a 33% roster turnover. Far different than what the Jaguars did last year with basically running it back after the playoff loss to Kansas City. Final thought from Trevor Lawrence. It is April. Games don't actually count for, what, 4.5 months? Over 4.5 months? So, Trevor, what are you guys doing mid-April to get ready for the season?
I think the big thing in this portion of the year is a lot of it is physical. I mean, it's a little bit mental in meetings. You have some set time to meet and kind of intro some of the playbook and just scheme and all those things for some of the new guys and old guys, because there's things that change every year that you adjust in your scheme. Like, there's a lot of stuff that we're adjusting and trying to make better moving forward. So that's going to be good for us. So we got to learn that and get comfortable with it. But really, physically, this is the time of year where I feel like you can devote most of your time to physically training, getting stronger, you know, getting your body ready for what's going to come. And that takes a lot of time. You know, you can't just start doing that in training camp. It's too late. You know, you're going to break down. So really, that's kind of what I focus on this time of year, is getting my body where I want it to be come training camp.
The thoughts of Jaguar quarterback Trevor Lawrence earlier today down at the Miller Electric Center. The Jaguars will have a media pre-draft luncheon on Thursday. Trent Baalke, Doug Peterson will meet the media. I have no doubt, Denmark, they're going to give us their entire game plan for next week in Detroit. They're going to tell us who they're drafting, and not only that, but what round they're drafting them in. So all the questions will pretty much stop, right, Thursday after that luncheon. So we're looking forward to getting all the answers from Baalke and Peterson, as we normally do. I kid because I care, but I will tell you this. Of all of those that I've been to, going back all the way to Shaq Harris, to Gene Smith, to Dave Caldwell, and now to Trent Baalke, Baalke at that media luncheon probably gives more information than the other three guys. Shaq Harris didn't give up very much. Gene Smith, are you kidding me? Dave Caldwell didn't know what he was doing anyway, so it didn't matter if he told you right. He got it wrong. Trent Baalke does give up a lot of good information. Doesn't give away the farm, right? Doesn't tell you verbatim, but Baalke is pretty good. At least he has been in that media draft luncheon, at least in my opinion. So we'll get some answers there, and then a week from Thursday is the NFL draft. Emory Hunt, the founder of Football Game Plan, probably the most comprehensive draft guide you will find, hundreds and hundreds of pages of information, is available now. We'll tell you how to get your hands on it. Also, you see him at CBS Sports HQ. Look, every Jaguar fan right now is talking trade up for a wide receiver, stay at 17 and draft a wide receiver or a defensive back. I don't necessarily disagree with that, but I think offensive tackle is in play, because keep in mind, this is not a one-year deal, right? You draft somebody in the first round, presumably for 5, 10, 12 years down the road. And keep in mind, after 2024, you got Anton Harrison under contract, but with Cam Robinson and Walker Little are free agents. So even though you have depth at offensive tackle this year, that could go away very quickly after this season, depending on what the Jaguars want to do with Robinson and Little. So I still think offensive tackle potentially in play at 17. And I've told you guys, going on now basically the entire offseason on Hacker After Dark, my caveat in this whole thing is Jared Verse. I'm all for drafting a DB or a wide receiver or even an offensive tackle, with the caveat being Jared Verse. To me, there is no reason why Jared Verse should be there at 17. And I would still be very, very surprised if he was there at 17. But the more mock drafts that you see, in fact, I saw a couple of more today, it had Jared Verse available at 17. And look, I know maybe that's not the most pressing need, but you tell me I can have Trayvon Walker, Josh Allen, Eric Armstead, and Jared Verse on my defensive line, with Devon Hamilton, Roy Robertson Harris, I can move Trayvon inside potentially in that scenario. Man, I'm thinking about that. I am thinking about that. DB is probably a bigger need. Wide receiver, potentially a bigger need. But if you're talking about the best available talent, and why would Jared Verse be there at 17? Well, if there's a run on quarterbacks, which there should be, right? You're talking maybe four quarterbacks are gone before the Jaguars pick. That could force people down the board. If they're a run on wide receiver, maybe three wide receivers are gone before the Jaguars pick. That could force defensive guys down the board. And is there that run on offensive tackles? You could see two, maybe three offensive tackles being gone before the Jaguars pick, which again, could force defensive guys down the board. It is a good year to need defensive players because there's a projection right now that there not maybe one defensive guy taken in the top 10, not one. Dallas Turner of Alabama appears to be the guy that will go potentially in the top 10. And then you got your Terrion Arnolds, your Quinyon Mitchells, your Latus from UCLA. But Jared Verse, man, that's my caveat. If he's there at 17, brother, I am thinking about that. There is no question about it. I'm thinking about Emory Hunt and football game plan. The draft guide is out. Let's talk Jaguars. Let's recap free agency. And let's talk wide receivers in the draft. Let's talk DBs in the draft. And will Jared Verse be there at 17? I'm going to ask Emory Hunt that question. You'll find out his response next. Thursday night, Hacker in for Baloo. And we're glad you're with us right here in the city of Jacksonville. It's 1010XL and it's 92.5 FM.
Let's ring up another guest on the All-Pro Roofing phone line.
Back here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville, we are glad you are with us. Of course, the Jaguars hold the 17th pick in round number one. The Jaguars are one of the more active teams in NFL free agency. What will that mean when it comes to the draft now in less than 3 weeks? With that, Emory Hunt is one of our favorites to talk draft with. He is the owner of Football Game Plan. You can also see him on CBS Sports HQ, and Emory's always kind enough to give us some time here on 1010XL. Emory, how you doing?
I'm doing fine, man. I appreciate you guys having me on.
Hey, Emory, we always thank you this time of year. We know how busy you are. All right, we're going to talk a lot of draft with you, certainly, but you and I haven't spoken since the offseason began. Jacksonville and the AFC South, quite frankly, two of the most active teams and divisions going when it comes to free agency. Just a quick thought, Emory, on the Jaguars first. What did you make? Arrivals, departures? What did you make of their offseason so far?
I think they've done a solid job defensively, man. Eric Armstead, like Darnell Savage, I'm still a big fan of him. And obviously, Ronald Darby gives them some veteran presence as well on the corner. So I think defensively, they've done a really good job. Now, on the offensive side of the ball, obviously bringing in Gabe Davis gives them a dependable, you know, option at receiver. Duvernay is someone that can help them out immediately in the return game. And so for me, improving special teams, improving defense, I thought that was big moves right now for Jacksonville.
Eric Armstead, in particular, what could he do for guys like Josh Allen and Trayvon Walker?
Definitely free up some opportunities for them in one-on-one situations because he is so long and athletic, and he still plays with that great length and athleticism to where he's going to command some double teams, and if they don't double him, he's very good in terms of getting pressure on his own. So it just bolsters the defensive line. It makes them hell to defend up front. And now you start to develop that rotation. You got guys like, you know, Abdullah coming into his second season. Lacey, I was a big fan of. Actually, was my number one five technique last year. And Roy Robertson Harris. So there's a lot of action up front, a lot of things to like about what they've done. They also bring in Travis Gibson as well. So I like what they've done. And adding an Eric Armstead continues to help bolster the rotation. It helps accentuate those guys that are able to get after the quarterback a little bit better.
Emory Hunt is the owner of Football Game Plan. The draft guide for Football Game Plan is out. We will tell you all about that in just a moment. Quickly, you mentioned Travis Gibson. That's a guy we haven't talked a lot about. He's one of those under-the-radar guys. 10 sacks in Chicago in 21 and 22 combined. Was in Tennessee last year, didn't do very much. Injuries were a big part of that. Could that be a sleeper that we're not really paying attention to and maybe we should here in Jacksonville?
Yeah, especially when you're thinking about him in the scope of being a situational pass rusher, because that's what it's all about. You know, you're not asking him to be a starter. You're asking him to essentially be a hired gun, and that's what you want. Guys that can continue to stay fresh throughout the game, that can consistently bring that pressure. So there's some depth there as well, some young guys I want to see step up, because I'm a big fan of Deshaun Dixon, DJ Coleman I was a big fan of out of Missouri. So it's going to be fascinating to watch the rotation and the training camp battles with those guys vying for those opportunities, because they have capable talent on the roster that can get pressure.
The Luke Fortner experiment, at least for the time being, Emory, appears to be over as the Jaguars brought in Mitch Morse. what could Morse and the re-signing of Ezra Cleveland do for the interior of that Jaguar O-line?
Well, Morse gives you that veteran presence, and Cleveland brings that continuity. And we know continuity is king along the offensive line. If you can get guys that have played together to stay together, it helps both of the offensive front, because that's the biggest thing. You could assemble so much talent across the board, but if there's no continuity, there's no communication, and then subsequently there's no consistency. So I like that they were able to bring him back in the fold, and it's just going to help both of that offensive five.
You know, Emory, I'm curious. Locally, we seem to like the Gabe Davis signing here. It has, like, Christian Kirk vibes to me of 2 years ago. Locally, we like it. Nationally, it's getting panned a little bit. Now, Christian Kirk no longer gets panned because when he's healthy, he has proven to be a very good wide receiver for the Jaguars. But I'm curious your standpoint, a guy that covers the league on a national basis, why maybe outside of Jacksonville, the Gabe Davis signing is not as liked as maybe it is here in Duval County?
Because they're making him the scapegoat for Josh Allen's ineffectiveness in the postseason. And that's basically what it is. We've seen this with – it's funny because if you look out west with the Chargers, it's funny how Austin Eckler is now not a good running back, because they say that, you know, the tweet that came out that said, hey, what if, you know, Justin Herbert had a run game? Like, damn. So Austin Eckler is not a good back anymore. And, you know, they'll say Justin Herbert never had weapons, as if Mike Williams went healthy, as if Keenan Allen went healthy, as if he didn't have Hunter Henry, as if they didn't draft a receiver in the first round. So you see that with Josh Allen. They're blaming Gabe Davis when really Gabe Davis is a very good receiver. So I think you're going to get that type of Gabe Davis, you know, effect, the good Gabe Davis out there on the field, because, again, he wants to prove everyone that, hey, I can play. I'm not a bum. I'm actually a really good receiver. And I just feel like nationally, for certain quarterbacks, they make excuses for, you know, they'll scapegoat to other players on the roster, as opposed to just saying, hey, man, maybe the quarterback is not playing his best right now. They'll point the finger at every other person on that roster. You see it out here in New York with the Giants, as opposed to pointing the finger at the main person, and that's usually the quarterback.
Emory, final thought on free agency before we get to the draft. You mentioned Darnell Savage earlier. Doug Peterson made some news a couple of weeks ago. We thought Savage was going to be the Rayshon Jenkins replacement at safety. Come to find out, it looks like he's going to be more of a nickel guy. So now you have Ronald Darby, Darnell Savage, Tyson Campbell, and Antonio Johnson, the second-year player out of Texas A&M, looks like he is going to be the Rayshon Jenkins replacement at safety. What do you make of the Jags' overhaul there in the defensive backfield?
They're good. I mean, listen, and you can also add in Amani Oruwariye as well. I thought he played some solid ball with the Giants and, you know, the Lions, you know, a sub guy. So Savage, I always viewed him as a combo safety. So that's someone that can play down in the nickel, that can cover as a corner, that can also drop back deep, that can also play on the hash. So you're adding versatile talent on the back end. And we know this is a matchup league, and it's a game day matchup league. So, you know, one day, one game, he may be a nickel. The next game, he may be a strong safety. The next game, he may be a corner. So it all depends on the matchup, but that's what you want to get. You want to get guys that can do multiple things.
Have the Jaguars done enough, Emory, in your opinion, at corner and at safety, and particularly at corner, I guess, because that was the thought going into pick 17 prior to free agency. Darius Williams out. The Jaguars need a corner. Everybody talks about Quinyon Mitchell, one of the two Alabama guys. But then they go get Ronald Darby. They go get Darnell Savage. They bring in these guys. Is corner still the top pressing need for the Jaguars, in your opinion?
It can be. You know, now you put yourself in a situation where you're at the best player available type of scenario where, you know, we're going to see a run on quarterbacks early. You may see a run on receiver or tackle early, and all of that pushes talent down to where Jacksonville could be sitting there with a prime spot where you might still have an elite corner on the board, and you don't want to pass on an elite corner. So why not? You know, and that also helps out. You could bring along a guy slowly where you don't have to throw him out there early because you signed those veterans that you mentioned. But if you draft an elite player and you'll let him compete, if he's not ready to go day one, you don't have to worry about, you know, Ronald Darby out there or, you know, someone else. But if he's ready to go, then it just helps your room out because you have the ability to put the rookie out there and then fall back on veteran depth. So it doesn't hurt to really still think in terms of elite cornerback prospect could definitely be in play for Jacksonville.
Emory Hunt, the owner of Football Game Plan. Emory, I tell you this every year, your draft guide is nuts. all the information you have. I believe it's the largest draft guide every year. I mean, pages and pages of information, and we'll get to that in a moment. Tell the good folks here in Jacksonville where they can get their hands on the football game plan draft guide. If Quinyon Mitchell is gone, and let's say Arnold from Alabama is gone, that's at least the projection right now. Every other corner is there. Is there somebody worth taking at 17? And if so, who would that guy be?
There's so many players worth taking at 17. It'd be silly to name a bunch of them, right? So it really all depends on who's still there. You may still get the Alabama kids there. You know, McKinstry and Terrion Arnold. Those are excellent options. You may find that you get a Jarvis Brownlee out of Louisville. Big fan of what he brings to the table. He's an excellent cover corner as well. So there's a ton of players that can help the Jaguars at pick 17, which is why it is so important for them to really not dismiss that corners off the table, because this is a very good class of corners, in my opinion.
Let's go to wide receiver. Calvin Ridley out, Gabe Davis in. The way it stands right now, Christian Kirk, Gabe Davis, and Zay Jones are the top three wide receivers. Wide receiver is also a name that you see linked to the Jaguars, particularly a guy like Brian Thomas out of LSU, A.D. Mitchell out of Texas. Your thoughts on the wideout position when it comes to Jacksonville at 17?
Well, I wouldn't discount Parker Washington as well, too. I'm a big fan of his game, too. So, you know, there's some talent there. At receiver, you kind of say, okay, what can we use? Do we want the deep guy, the guy that wins with his routes deeper down the field to help out the deep passing game? Do we want more catch and run guys? Because I feel like this draft is littered with catch and run guys. Both Brian Thomas and A.D. Mitchell, low key, are catch and run guys. Folks look at the size and think, oh, these are vertical stretch players. Sure, that's part of their game too. But these guys can take a short pass and go a long way. They navigate a broken field rather well. So those can help out Jacksonville. You also bring up a guy in Ladd McConkey, you know, who could play inside or outside and can get vertical down the field and is a catch and run guy. So there's a ton of talent, man. Like, this is why people talk about this class as an elite group. You want a Christian Kirk kind of type? Well, Malachi Corley of Western Kentucky is another one. He's a physical guy, 5'10 and about 215. So he's another one. Keon Coleman. Listen, Jacksonville is sitting in a great spot to grab an elite receiver and or an elite corner if they so choose so.
If it comes down to Thomas or Mitchell at 17, who do you have higher on your board?
Well, I grade players differently. So I have A.D. Mitchell as, you know, a Z receiver, which is kind of like a guy that plays a little bit off the line of scrimmage. And I have a Thomas as an X, you know, so which is kind of like, you know, he's good versus press. And so for me, they're right there. And so both guys, I do have A.D. Mitchell ahead of Brian Thomas by a point in my draft grade, and I do have them both as split ends. I've misspoke, but I do have A.D. Mitchell a little bit higher. I feel like he's a little bit more underrated because of the quarterback play at Texas, and that's why he didn't have the gaudy numbers that we saw from a Brian Thomas based off who he had him throwing the football. So, you know, both guys are excellent. I have both guys with an 80 grade above, so that's like really good first-round talent, so you really can't go wrong.
Final moments, Emory Hunt, football game plan. He is the owner. You also see him at CBS Sports HQ. Emory, what I've been told by a lot of guys in your line of work, and I'm curious you because you're one of the guys to go to, if you need corner and wide receiver, you're better off taking a corner in round one because wide receiver may be deeper, and at 48, you can still get a very good player in round two. Do you agree with that assessment?
I say take the best player you have your chance to take and don't try to game the draft. If you think this corner can help you out right now and is elite, take him. Because if you try to play the draft and kind of like scale back, okay, I'm going to make sure I dip back and then, you know, I can kind of get this guy. No, you never know how the draft is going to play out. Take the guy that you like, that you have a high grade on when you have the chance to take him.
Final question, because I want to get to your football draft guide, your football game plan draft guide after this. I'm a Jared Verse guy. I understand that might not be the biggest need for the Jaguars, but the thought of Eric Armstead, Josh Allen, Trayvon Walker, and Jared Verse should have Jaguar fans salivating, in my opinion. And quite frankly, Emory, I'm shocked because a lot of mock drafts that you see, some have Jared Verse available at 17. I didn't think that would be a possibility a month or two ago. Will he be there? I tend to doubt it personally, But if he is, Emery, is that something the Jaguars should at least think about?
Oh, absolutely. Because here's the thing. He may be there because let's say this, and we know how the draft tends to go. You may have a situation where the run on we know the run on quarterback is probably going to go 1, 2, 3. But the run on receivers or tackles could also push guys down because who is going to start the run? Whether it's whoever takes the first receiver, expect 5 receivers to go next. Whoever takes the first tackle, expect 5 tackles to go next. And it all pushes elite talent down to Jacksonville. So you may get a situation where you may have your pick and chooses of Latu or Verse, you know? And so you may be able to say, hey, we got a chance to take an elite pass rusher, receiver, or cornerback. And that really makes things tough for Jacksonville, but it's a great problem to have.
It would be a great problem to have. Memory serves, I think Jacksonville with Anton Harrison kind of started that run a little bit towards the end of round one last year at offensive tackle. All right, Emery, football game plan. You are the owner. You have the football game plan draft guide. It is awesome every single year. Tell the good folks here in Jacksonville about it and, more importantly, where they can find it.
Listen, this year we have over 900 individual scouting reports. A lot of guys went back to school because usually it's over 1,000. But it's still the largest draft guide out there. Full-color PDF. You can find it at footballgameplan.com/2024draftguide. So it's great for the draft and through the draft and through the regular season because we know the practice squad gets filled up. We know guys hop on and off the roster. And we were pretty sure that we will have a scouting report on whoever is getting drafted or whoever the Jaguars signed and throws on a roster. And it's a great way to help scout the opponents in the AFC South as well, knowing who was on the roster, what my thoughts were on them. And if you are able, if you're a loyal subscriber of the draft guide, and I put these out digitally since 2020, if you purchase one every year since 2020, you will right now be sitting on over 4,300 individual scouting reports. So you would have a depth of knowledge on players that are in the NFL, UFL, CFL, European League of Football. We would have you covered. That's why this is so valuable, not only for this draft, but for years to come.
It is crazy the amount of information that's in this draft guide from Emery Hunt at Football Game Plan. Trust me on that. Emery, leave us with this. Free agency was wild in the AFC South. Now that all the dust has settled prior to the draft, how do you assess the division as we enter the month of April?
If you remember last year, I picked the Colts to win the division,
right? That's right, you did. You were a big popular guy on the show when you did that last year, and you almost nailed it, too.
Almost nailed it. So this year, I will say this, man. Houston got better. Indy got better. Jacksonville got better. Tennessee got better on defense. I can't even make a prediction right now because I feel that Chalk would say Houston. But, man, this is good. This is why the draft is important because that could be the separator from who is going to win this division. And if we're being completely honest, we may see two teams out the South get into the playoffs this year. So I can't make a prediction right now, April 8th. But my goodness, it's going to be a very tough division going down the stretch.
Yeah, we'll get predictions from Emery Hunt in a couple of months when training camp approaches. All right, Emery, one more time. Tell us the website. Where can people get their hands on the draft guide?
footballgameplan.com/2024draftguide. It's the best value for your buck because it gives you all the information that you need. The most detailed and largest draft guide in existence.
Emery, you're the man. I know you're busy. Thank you for taking time out for us here in Jacksonville. We'll do it again in a couple of months, my friend.
Looking forward to it, man. Always a pleasure bringing me on the show.
Hacker After Dark on 1010XL.
Little Hacker After Dark before dark tonight. In for Blue, 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Rick is at a concert, I believe, tonight, right? A lot going on in the city. Oh, that reminds me. I'm happy I brought that up. We're givers here on Hacker After Dark. That's what Denmark and I like to do. We like to give to you, the good men and women of Jacksonville, Florida. One of my favorite events of the entire year. I've been a judge at this event for, golly, probably 10, 11 years now. Guns and Hoses comes up this Saturday. If you want to go to Guns N' Hoses, the firemen, the police officers, get it on in a boxing ring. Be caller number 4 right now, 641-1010. And Dylan Denmark will hook you up with a pair of tickets for Guns N' Hoses this Saturday here in the city of Jacksonville, 641-1010. Yeah, I mentioned Blues at a concert, so I'm going to Tampa this weekend for, I believe, what'll be, feels like a dozen Kenny Chesney concerts. I never went to a Kenny Chesney concert in my life before I met my wife. Not one. And I met my wife in 2000. When did I meet Heidi? 2013. We got married in 2015. She is as big a Kenny Chesney fan as you will find. We've been to Florabama, and we've been to Atlanta, and we've been to Foxborough. Now we're going to knock Raymond James off of our list. We were at Daly's place last year. He loves her some Kenny Chesney, and I just want to be there to see it happen personally. That's why I go. She gets fired up. That's exciting. So there you have it. That's my Saturday in a nutshell. Amazingly enough, of course, Orlando, the Magic, will play their first NBA playoff game in 4 years on a Saturday, where I will probably be in line waiting to get into Raymond James Stadium for the Kenny Chesney concert. So I tell Heidi last night, I say, hey, gates don't open till 4, Magic play at 1. There's a lot of great sports bar options around Raymond James Stadium. What do you say we go on over to one of the sports bars and take in game 1, Magic Cavs, before we head on over to see Kenny Chesney? And I think Zach Brown Band is there. That did not go over well. No, she wants to get in line. She wants to be immersed in No Shoes Nation, as they call it. So I got to come up with a backup plan. So I've downloaded the Bally Sports app onto my phone, because as fired up as I'll be to see Kenny Chesney for the 12th time, I'm sorry, the Magic game is kind of important. So I will be the only person, I guarantee you, the only person in the parking lot of Raymond James Stadium on Saturday afternoon waiting to get in to see Kenny Chesney that will be watching game 1 of Orlando and Cleveland. Speaking of Orlando and Cleveland, the voice of the Orlando Magic, television voice, longtime play-by-play man on Bally Sports, my friend David Steele. He joins us here on Hacker After Dark in less than 15 minutes. Back into the Jaguars for one moment. Denmark, we got a winner on Guns N' Hoses?
We do, Mr. John.
John, enjoy yourself, brother. It's a great event, great spectacle. Always enjoy it. Unfortunately, the Kenny Chesney concert happens to be on the same day this year, so I will not be in attendance. It's the first one I've missed in a long, long time, but they are a blast, and I'm already looking forward to getting back at it next year with the good folks at Guns N' Hoses. But enjoy yourself this Saturday for Guns N' Hoses 2024. So back into the Jaguars for a moment. There is a narrative among some that the Jaguars need to do something in retaliation to the Texans getting Stephon Diggs and the Titans getting Calvin Ridley. The Jaguars need to boost their wide receiver core, need to boost the skill positions around Trevor Lawrence. Brandon Ayuk is a name that's been thrown out there for a while. T. Higgins is a name that's been thrown out there for a while. Some Jaguar fans are dreaming big about Justin Jefferson. And, of course, everybody seemingly wants to trade up to Atlanta's spot at 8 or Chicago's spot at 9 to draft either Rome Odunze from Washington or Malik Nabers from LSU. What if none of that happens? What if the Jaguars stand pat at 17 and maybe take Brian Thomas Jr. or A.D. Mitchell, a wide receiver, but what if they don't? What if they go Jared Verse, or what if they go offensive tackle, or what if they potentially go corner in round 1? Maybe get a wide receiver in round 2 or round 3, but bottom line, you go into the year with Christian Kirk, Gabe Davis, and Zay Jones as clearly your three best options at wide receiver. Is that enough for the Jaguars? Is that enough for Trevor Lawrence? See, to me, if you want to retaliate to Stephon Diggs joining Nico Collins and Tank Dell and C.J. Stroud in Houston, or if you want to retaliate to Calvin Ridley going with Tony Pollard and DeAndre Hopkins to Tennessee, well, wouldn't you retaliate by helping out your defense who has to stop those teams? wouldn't you retaliate by getting a Jared Verse or getting a Quinyon Mitchell or getting a Terrion Arnold? I don't think you retaliate by getting a wide receiver, because your defense is still going to have problems playing very good offenses in the division. This comes down to, do you believe Travis Etienne, Evan Engram, Zay Jones, Gabe Davis, and Christian Kirk, those five, are enough talent around Trevor Lawrence? And do you believe, whether it's Parker Washington, whether it's Devin Duvernay, whether it's Brenton Strange or Tank Bigsby, that those guys will emerge into another options to help Trevor? If you believe that, there's no reason to take a wide receiver or trade for a wide receiver. If you don't believe that, you probably need to address that via trade, via first-round draft pick. And we're going to find out very quick what the Jaguars believe. We're going to find out 9 days from now. We're going to find out in about 219 hours from right now what the Jaguars believe, to see if they go wide receiver or if they make a big trade on draft night. Halftime here on Hacker After Dark, 1 hour down, 1 hour to go. We'll take you up till 8 o'clock. We're in for Blue. We're glad you're with us. The Orlando Magic back in the playoffs after 4 years. David Steele, the one-time voice of the Florida Gators, has been with Orlando since the inception, 1989. I am a giant David Steele fan. We talk Magic, we talk Cavs, we talk playoffs with my buddy David Steele next. It is a Tuesday evening in Jacksonville, Florida, and you got it right here. Hacker After Dark, 1010 XL, 92.5 FM.
Let's ring up another guest on the All-Pro Roofing phone line.
Back here on 1010 XL and 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville, we are glad you are with us. It is playoff time in the NBA, and for the first time in 4 years, the Orlando Magic are playoff bound. They are Southeast Division champions. They are the 5 seed in the Eastern Conference, and their playoffs begin on Saturday afternoon up in Cleveland, taking on the Cleveland Cavaliers. With that, let's go to the longtime play-by-play voice of the Orlando Magic on Bally Sports, my friend David Steele, always kind enough to join us here on 1010 XL in Jacksonville. David, how we doing?
I'm doing great, Ryan. How are you doing?
David, I'm wonderful. Watching you and Jeff in the season finale against Milwaukee, and it was a win and end situation. First time the Magic have been in that situation in quite some time. And boy, it didn't start off great, David, but those last three quarters, arguably the best three quarters the Magic played the entire year.
I agree, especially on the defensive end of the floor. Offensively, that's not where this team really hangs its hat so far in its young development, but they can play some defense now. And when they get after it, they're as good, probably the best defensive team in the NBA.
David, they won 47 games, and that comes after 22 wins in Jamal Mosley's first year, 34 wins last year, and this year 47, more than doubling their win total in just 2 seasons. That doesn't happen very often in the NBA. I mean, how did we get here from 22 wins 2 years ago to 47 wins this year?
Some really good decisions by the front office. Drafting in 2021, Jalen Suggs with the 5th pick, Franz Wagner with the 8th pick, a pick that was acquired in a trade with Chicago, which also brought Wendell Carter Jr. So you have those two guys that are now in their third year. And then, of course, in 2022, the drafting of Paolo Banchero as the number one pick turned out to be just an absolute home run. He's already, in my opinion, one of the top 20, 25 players in the NBA. So he's 21. Wagner and Suggs are 22. You've got a nice young core around them. You've got a couple of veterans with a great free agent acquisition was Joe Ingles. A 36-year-old veteran that's played in 7 postseasons in his NBA career. So, he brings the experience, and they've just put a really nice roster together. And then I think the last piece was the hiring of Jamal Mosley 3 years ago to guide this young group. And he's just been unbelievable. Everybody you talk to around the league just raves about the job that he's done. Nobody seems to be surprised that he's done it. He had a great reputation around the league before the Magic hired him. So that hiring was a home run as well.
Long time play-by-play man for the Orlando Magic on Bally Sports, David Steele, here with us on 1010XL in Jacksonville. And David, as a guy that's been there through all the years, you know, you've been calling the games, I've been watching every game. Man, there were some lean years. Well, let's not sugarcoat it. There were some bad years. And I think that's what makes this all the more rewarding is that you mentioned Jalen Suggs, Franz Wagner, Wendell Carter, Mo Wagner. Boy, they got their head bashed in a lot 2 years ago, right? 22-60 was the reality. But that experience, and you draft Paolo last year, and now all of a sudden you see these young guys emerge into the fifth spot in the East and doubling their win total, and you could see the celebration on Sunday. Boy, those losses made it all worth it now in the end.
Yeah, it was a lot of hard work, a lot of development, you know, a lot of practice time, accepting a lot of coaching. Another part of it, you know, is accepting your role. I talk with a lot of longtime NBA people, and what they're most impressed about with the Magic is that it is such a young team, but you have players who have accepted what their role is with the head coach and within the context of being a successful team. That's not easy to do. You know, we had a group 10 years ago with Tobias Harris, Victor Oladipo, some really talented young players. And it seems like they were kind of competing for being that top guy, Aaron Gordon, good players. And, you know, it just took players time to accept what they are as an NBA player. And it seems like with this group, they've figured that out a lot quicker than most young players do. So that's been a big part of the success, too.
And to that point, I'm watching Bally Sports, the Jamal Mosley press conference after the Milwaukee game. And he told a story during that game where he was going to let Wendell Carter check in. Wendell Carter didn't start. He came off the bench because he was having back spasms a couple of days prior. And Wendell was going to the scorer's table, but Jonathan Isaac had it out there rolling. And here's Wendell Carter, a 24-year-old millionaire, that goes back to his head coach and says, Jonathan's rolling, let's keep him in there. I mean, you want to talk about a pro's pro, and you can really say that about the entire Magic roster.
Yeah, that was a good example. You're right, Ryan. He is a pro now. Wendell Carter Jr. He's always ready, very mature, way beyond his 24 years on Earth. And you know, that's what it takes too. I mean, Banchero, really mature for a 21-year-old. Franz Wagner, Mo Wagner. You know, those guys are young. They're 26 and 22, but they understand. They get it. They're professionals. They're serious about their craft. They want to be great. So, you know, again, you've brought in the right people and you've got the right guy coaching them. And it's, you know, this is only the beginning, Ryan. This team is way below where it is going to be, in my opinion, in 2, 3, 4, 5 years. It's pretty special to see what's going on. One of my favorite teams, the Magic, have ever fielded.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that. I mean, you've carried them all. You've covered every team the Magic have had, from the Shaq and Penny days to even the 89 expansion team, obviously through Dwight, Richard, and Hidu Turkoglu, and Vucevic, Gordon, and all those fellas, Fournier, and now here we are. You in particular, a guy that's seen every Magic game, you think this is one of your, you know, most favorite teams you've covered.
Yeah, they're likable. They're good. They're young. They're talented. The coach is such a great guy. It's easy to pull for Jamal. In my opinion, there have been several inflection points in the franchise's history. And, you know, I've been there since 1989, since the beginning. And when we had Shaq and Penny, that was a young team that made it all the way to the NBA Finals. Shaq and Penny were, I think, 22 and 23 years old in 94, 95. And then there was the Dwight Howard era, you know, when you knew that with him, you could build a really strong team around. This feels like the same type of situation with Paolo Banchero being the lead dog, the dude, as Jeff Turner likes to say. And then you build a team around him with some outstanding players led by Franz Wagner. And they've got money to sign a free agent. So the future really does look bright.
A couple of more for David Steele, the longtime voice of the Orlando Magic there on Bally Sports. And you and I have talked about the fans in the past, but it really came to fruition again on Sunday. As lean as the years were for that organization, the fans never left. And I always correlate them in Orlando to us here in Jacksonville with the Jaguars. As bad as it was for the Jaguars at times, the fan base here has been incredible, supporting a losing organization. Orlando, much of the same. And for those fans in Central Florida to be able to have a win-and-in scenario and win in that fashion, that was absolutely great to see.
Yeah, I agree. The crowds were really good through those lean years, and now they're just spectacular. I think we've had 30, maybe 31, 32 sellouts this year out of the 40 games that were played in the Kia Center, maybe even a little higher than that. I'm not exactly sure what the number was, but almost every game was sold out. The fans were great. The team won a lot of games. It had one of the best home court records in the NBA. So obviously the team responds to the crowd. And it's good to have winning basketball in Orlando. I mean, it changes everything around here. It's really interesting how sports can bring people together. Everybody's talking about it in the Orlando area when you go into coffee shops or restaurants, and everybody wants to talk about the Magic, and they're excited about what the future holds. So it's a great time to be a Magic fan right now.
David Steele here with us. I often say, you know, you don't need to break down Anthony Bowie or Dennis Scott or Daryl Armstrong to be a Magic fan. Come on board the bandwagon here in Jacksonville, and certainly a lot of people up here are following the team. That's about 90 minutes south of us. All right, Cleveland is the first round opponent, the 4-5 matchup. David, how would you assess the Cavaliers and the Magic? They split the season series there 2-2.
You know, and not just that, Ryan, but both teams won on the other team's home court. So, you know, that's kind of interesting because we have not been a very good road team this year, but got a win in Cleveland, and the Cavaliers winning in Orlando shows that they're a tough team on the road, because the Magic only lost 11 times all season long on their home court. So I think it's going to be a 50-50 series. I think you can flip a coin on it. I expect it to be really physical. The coaches see the game very similarly. They're best friends off the court. Their families have vacationed together in the off seasons. So, and they have a similar philosophy on how the NBA game should be played, with physicality, with force, be the first team to punch in the first quarter, be physical and aggressive from the opening tip to the end. Both of these teams have that same philosophy. So I think it's going to be, I guess you'd call it a rock fight. We're going to have a bunch of rock fights with Cleveland. It's going to be a fun series to watch.
How much does Jamal Mosley, David, have to count on guys like Joe Ingles, Gary Harris? I think Isaac and Fultz are the other two. There's only four guys on the roster that ever played in a playoff game. I mean, that's crazy to think about. How much are those veterans going to have to lead the way this week?
It's going to be big. And Joe Ingles, even though he plays, and this might not even be the number in the postseason, he plays about 15, 16, 17 minutes a night. That might go down, but still his presence will be outstanding. It'll be huge when he's on the court. And then what he does on the bench in huddles in the locker room, that's where his value is really tremendous. Jonathan Isaac, I think, is really the X factor in this. Jamal brilliantly started him yesterday. You mentioned Wendell coming off the bench. And Isaac, they've handled him just perfectly this year because, as you know, he was out for 2.5 years with a severe knee injury. And they brought him along really slowly. They didn't play him too many minutes. He averaged about 14 or 15 minutes during the season, but in the last 2 or 3 weeks, you notice they've been ramping those minutes up. And then he started yesterday and he played 26 minutes. If you get 25 to 30 minutes of Jonathan Isaac for the entire series with Cleveland, that's going to be the difference in winning a couple of games.
And the beautiful part about the playoffs, no back-to-backs, because that's where J.I. was missing a lot of games due to maintenance. There are no back-to-backs in the NBA postseason, so there'll be a day off at least in between these games. Final moments with David Steele, longtime Magic play-by-play voice there on Bally Sports. David, I'm going to work on myself over the next 5 days to get myself out of this train of thought. And I know the organization's not thinking this, but I wonder honestly how many fans are thinking this. It was such a relief to get in, right? Because the season was slipping away, then they found a way to beat Milwaukee and they're in. I'm almost of the mindset that everything now is gravy, and I don't like to be in that mindset, but that's kind of the way I feel, you know, barring a catastrophe and losing four straight by 20-plus points. What is the feeling down there in Orlando moving forward? I mean, is the fan base, is it gravy now, or do they want more?
I think you make a good point. You know, because it is such a young team, and because this group has not experienced playoff basketball, there is a danger there. And, you know, sometimes players think they know, but they don't know until they get there and they find out. So we'll see. You know, maybe they'll shock the world, but young teams generally don't do great in the playoffs, inexperienced teams. This team really kind of reminds me of the 93-94 Magic team. That was Penny's first year, Shaq's second year. The team, I think, won 50 games, had a nice seeding in the first round, but an experienced Indiana Pacer team knocked them out pretty handily. Byron Scott-led team for Indiana. So, you know, that could be the scenario, but, you know, every season, every team is different. I do know that Jamal Mosley will have these guys ready to go, and he's been such a great motivator. So, you know, he could be the X factor in terms of coaching and getting these guys to understand what is in front of them. But they're going to find out real soon, starting Saturday at 1 o'clock in Cleveland.
Yeah, the beautiful thing for Magic fans, too, you, Jeff Turner, Dante Marcatelli, the entire crew, Bally Sports will have the series, right? Every game of the Orlando-Cleveland series will be on Bally Sports?
Well, we know that game one, it looks like game one will be. I think the only exclusivity window is with ABC in the first round. So any game that nationally is televised by TNT or ESPN will be able to do a side-by-side broadcast. But if we get picked up by ABC, which is not likely, with our series, there are some, you know, really high profile first round series. So I do expect all the games will be on Bally.
Nothing against the national guys, David, but if I can get you and Jeff Turner for six or seven games, that's exactly what I want as an Orlando Magic fan. David, I know you're very busy. Thank you for the time. Safe travels to Cleveland, and let's go up there and bring back a W.
All right. Thank you, Ryan. It's always great talking to you.
This is Hacker After Dark on 1010XL.
Yes, it is. In for Blue, 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Again, a special thank you to my buddy David Steele, voice of the Orlando Magic, as Orlando gets their NBA playoffs underway on Saturday. The playoffs actually begin in the NBA tonight. The Western Conference play-in tournament tips off in less than 10 minutes. Interesting situation between the Lakers and the Pelicans. LeBron James and the Lakers, Zion Williamson and the Pelicans. So the winner of tonight's game is in the playoffs, which is great, right? The problem is the winner draws the defending world champion Denver Nuggets in round number one. The loser of tonight's game then has to play on Friday night against the winner of Sacramento and Golden State, which is a do-or-die game at 10 o'clock this evening. So if you're the Lakers or the Pelicans, do you want to play Denver in round one? Probably not, but you don't want to throw the game tonight, because what if you on Friday night run into Steph Curry in a 50-point performance and your season ends because you didn't win tonight? So it's a tough sledding for really every team involved. But the Lakers and the Pelicans, their season is not on the line. The loser will get another chance on Friday. Golden State, Sacramento, their season is on the line tonight. The loser of that game, their season is over. The winner will then take on the loser of New Orleans and LA on Friday night for the eighth seed in the Western Conference. Same thing in the East tomorrow. In the East tomorrow is actually a pretty good game. Philadelphia and Miami, the winner of that game tomorrow night, draws the New York Knicks in round number one. So the NBA playoffs don't officially get underway until Saturday, but of course play-in games are really a part of the postseason as well. Spring football has wrapped up in a lot of parts of the country. It actually wraps up for our area on Saturday, because Florida State will have the Garnet and Gold game at Doak Campbell Stadium. But Georgia, Miami, Florida, they've all wrapped up or are wrapping up spring football. And the Gators had the Orange and Blue game on Saturday in Gainesville and announced 48,000 took in the game at the Swamp on Saturday. Good crowd for a spring game. Andrew Spivey, GatorCountry.com, was in attendance. Let's talk DJ Lagway. Let's talk Graham Mertz. Let's talk hot seat for Billy Napier heading into 2024. And we'll also talk a little transfer portal. Yeah, the portal is back open. What finishing touches does the football team need to do in adding guys from the portal to the 2024 roster? We'll touch upon all that and more. Andrew Spivey, GatorCountry.com, recapping not only the Orange and Blue game, but the spring season as a whole at the University of Florida. He comes up next. Hacker After Dark on a Tuesday with you till 8 o'clock. Jacksonville, we're glad you're with us. It's 1010XL and it's 92.5 FM. Back here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville, we are glad you are with us. Year number three for Billy Napier, at least in the spring portion, is now in the rearview mirror as the Orange and Blue game took place on Saturday. What transpired down in Gainesville? What did we learn? And what's the thought process moving forward? For that, let's head to Gainesville. My buddy Andrew Spivey of GatorCountry.com, always kind enough to join us here on 1010XL in Jacksonville. Andrew, how you doing?
I'm doing good, man. You know, we just get to enjoy a glorified practice in the Swamp, and, you know, it's the end of it.
You know, first things first, I remember Orange and Blue games back in the day were a lot of fun. I remember going there as a young man, and I'm going to take – I think we're going to take our four-year-old. He'll be five next year. That'll be his first taste of the Swamp because I'm watching that game on ESPN+, which to me is ridiculous why they didn't air more spring games on television. But nevertheless, looked like a really good crowd. Looked like an engaged crowd. Fan base seemed to be pretty excited, at least on Saturday.
Yeah, you know, it was a better crowd than it has been in the last few years, for sure. You know, I think a lot of that has to do with it finally being back on Saturday instead of, what was it, Thursday one year, Friday the other year. You know, so having it in the middle of the day on a Saturday, I think, was good. And, you know, you had the students that were able to come out and, they kind of did a good job of promoting, hey, come to football, then go to baseball, even though baseball is struggling right now. And I thought it was a better crowd for sure. It was interesting because I was wondering how that was going to be with all the noise around Billy. But I'll say this, and you and I have talked about this so much, you know, over the last year almost, and that is the pressure on DJ Lagway. And every time DJ Lagway's name was, you know, broadcast over the stadium, the crowd just went nuts. So part of me thinks that, you know, the crowd was there to see what DJ Lagway was truly about. And, you know, he didn't shy away from it, and he had a good day overall. So, overall, good crowd, and the support's there. I mean, Billy can never say the support's not there because the fan base still loves Florida football.
I certainly want to get to Lagway, but Andrew, I want to begin with Graham Mertz. You know, again, what can you really tell when a guy's wearing black jerseys and is not going to have any contact from the defense? It is what it is, but I thought Mertz looked, you know, kind of sharp. And the interview he did with Chris Doering and them on ESPN+, boy, looked really relaxed. He knows this is his team. There's no pressure on him that DJ Lagway is going to take his job or anything along those lines. And I was impressed by Graham Mertz on Saturday. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, I wasn't able to see the interview with that, but, you know, seeing him in Gator Walk and during the game and pregame and stuff, he's very relaxed, and he has that, you know, leadership about him. Not in an arrogant way by any means, but he's definitely QB1, where when he talks, guys listen, and, you know, he commands the team really well. I think that he had a good day overall, 15 to 27, 243, if we're talking numbers, but he had a couple of big throws in the game that I thought, okay, this is really, really good. And, you know, I didn't get contact, but Graham Mertz is – never was a bad quarterback, and he didn't lose games for Florida last year. Florida didn't lose because of Graham Mertz. So I think that Graham Mertz is very suitable to run this offense and succeed in this offense. And we'll see, you know, what kind of packages Lagway has and that sort of thing. But I'm good with Graham Mertz.
Andrew Spivey, GatorCountry.com, here with us on 1010XL in Jacksonville. Now to DJ Lagway. You mentioned him earlier. There was some good. There was, quite frankly, a lot of good. There was some bad. He did have an interception. But in totality, Andrew, how would you assess Lagway on the field during the spring game?
Success. I thought, again, he had that the one throw where it was intercepted by Manny Nunnery in the, I believe it was third quarter, fourth quarter. And he had an open receiver there and should have thrown it. But he had a couple throws that in that game that it's like, okay, it showed how good he can really be. He had a really good throw to Marcus Burke to set up a touchdown. And he had a couple other throws that you could just see the talent oozing out of him. And I think the biggest thing for me with DJ was the moment wasn't too big. You know, he didn't get out of himself. He didn't try to do anything that he wasn't. And, he was very calm in everything he did. And it just shows where DJ Lagway is compared to a lot of freshmen quarterbacks and freshmen in general. DJ is a very mature guy and a guy that understands that there's a lot of pressure around him, but also understands he's QB2 right now and he needs to improve. And I think we've seen that. I definitely think we've seen that from practice one up until the scrimmage. You know, there's been some ups and downs. He had a scrimmage where he threw a couple interceptions because he thought he could get away with his arm strength. And you and I both know that in the SEC, you can't do that. You have to be precise with your throws. And, you know, arm strength doesn't win most of the time.
You know, this is not an analytics point of view or a very scientific point of view, but when I'm watching spring football, I want to look for things that stand out. And we're mentioning DJ Lagway, so while we're on the freshman, I got to tell you, this cat LJ McCray, the five-star from Daytona Beach Mainland, I don't know. I mean, I saw tape of him at the state title game, right, when they beat St. Augustine. I knew of him, obviously. But watching him out there, and that kid's a freshman, you understand why he's a five-star. He caught my eye on Saturday. What are your thoughts on him?
He's a dude. I mean, he's a guy that, you know, you're not going to keep him off the field. He's a guy that, you know, you look at him and you're like, no, oh, that's a junior. He's probably getting ready for payday year. You know, he's a freshman. And not only that, but he's really a high school senior. I mean, he is an early enrollee, and he's that good. I mean, there was a couple plays. There was one in particular, I believe it was the fourth quarter, where Hayden Hansen was trying to block him out on the edge, and he absolutely just abused Hayden Hansen to make a tackle on Montrell Johnson in the backfield, and it just showed how good he was. He's so quick off the ball, but don't underestimate how strong he is. He's a strong guy off that edge as well. And, you know, I think that when you look at McCray, you're looking at a guy that's probably a freshman all SEC next year, freshman all American, a guy who's going to play a lot. You know, Florida needed a pass rusher. They got one in LJ McCray.
Couple of more for Andrew Spivey of GatorCountry.com. Yeah, those two freshmen look like their futures are very bright. Lagway on offense, McCray on defense. Now back to the offensive side. Quickly, Andrew, running back. All right, they're looking to replace Trevor Etienne. What did you see out of the running back position on Saturday?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. The freshman that might have stole the show in general might have been Jaden Baugh. Wow. At 12 carries, 77 yards, that doesn't even tell the tale. He was breaking tackles, making some cuts that were really good cuts that, you know, you expect from a veteran running back. But Jaden Baugh is everything that, you know, we thought he could be, down the road. But he already is. He is a physical back. You know, they list him at about 220. I don't know that he's a full 220, but he's a big physical back that's going to be a guy who, you know, I would say already is probably RB2. I think he probably jumps Treyon Webb just simply because of his ability to run between the tackles and cut on a dime. I was very, very impressed by Jaden Baugh. He looked really good. Obviously, Montrell didn't get as many carries in the game because we all know what Montrell Johnson can do. Treyon Webb had a couple of runs that were pretty good as well. You know, he's going to be your kind of change-up back where he's more of your speed guy that can get outside, kind of like an ETN per se. But Baugh's a guy that I was really, really impressed with. KD Daniels, the freshman out of Mississippi, I thought looked good as well. You know, I think that when you look at it, running back is going to be a position that as long as Jabbar Jalouk and Billy Napier are there, you're going to have talent. Guys are going to want to play for a guy who likes to run the ball and run the ball successful. So I don't think you'll see an issue with the running back depth this year.
Refresh my memory on Jaden Baugh. Was he the Arkansas commit that Florida flipped?
Yes, he was the Arkansas commit out of Georgia. Had a really good relationship with Arkansas. Florida and Alabama both came on late offer, and Florida beat out Bama late in December for Baugh. And, you know, a guy that I thought had a really, really good senior year. Heading into his senior year, I thought he was an okay back, but that senior year tape is really, really good.
Oh, I like that, and you're right. He looked very good on Saturday. Wide receiver now. They got to replace Ricky Pearsall. Aiden Mizell did some nice things. You mentioned Marcus Burke right out of here at Jacksonville and Trinity Christian. What are we thinking behind Eugene Wilson? And I got to tell you, the transfer from Wisconsin looked pretty good as well.
Yeah, DK, you know, I think the thing with him is going to be that, you know, he has that connection, that familiarity with Graham Mertz already. They're very good friends. And, you know, he only had two catches in the game, was only targeted four times. And, you know, again, what did you need to see from him? You know, the coaching staff seen everything they need to see from him in practice and, you know, film throughout his college career already. So, you know, I don't think that we – learned anything new about him except for he's really good. He had a really good spring and dominated both of the scrimmages that were behind closed doors and stuff. And from everything we've been told, he's the guy that is going to replace Pearsall. You know, Eugene had a big day as well. You know, we all know how good Trey Wilson is. Trey Wilson is the best, you know, receiver, best, you know, overall, I think, offensive playmaker on this team. We know how good he is. You know, we talked about Burke from your area as well. Marcus Burke has the ability to be a really good receiver if he can ever be consistent and put together, you know, back-to-back good games and or back-to-back good plays even. You know, you see flashes of him every year, and then it's like you go a couple weeks with you, when you see nothing, and then it's like, okay, here's another flash. And if Marcus Burke can put that together, I think you're looking at a receiver that can be really, really good for this team. TJ Abrams, you know, I thought looked good running some routes as well. Early enrollee freshman. You had Tank Hawkins. You know, he's a guy that I think is going to be relied on a lot as well. And I'll be honest, I don't know that we're not looking at a situation where the third best receiver on this team is not even on this roster yet, as I think Billy Napier, Billy Gonzalez, and those guys are going to hit the portal to kind of look for a receiver or two.
Final moments with Andrew Spivey of GatorCountry.com. Defensively, we brought up LJ McCray. A lot of those young guys, TJ Searcy is another guy I'm expecting good things out of. A veteran is back, and Cameron Jackson. I mean, your thoughts defensively, because at times, Andrew, last year, let's be honest, it was awful. I mean, how much better is this Gator defense, in your opinion?
I think the defensive secondary is much, much improved. And that's crazy to say, you know, after a guy like Corey Raymond leaves. But I think it's much improved. And, you know, a lot of that is some of the guys. You know, I think DJ Douglas is a guy who has done really well coming in as a transfer. I thought he's really good. A guy like Aaron Gates, the redshirt freshman, he's finally healthy. You know, most people don't realize he had a torn ACL his senior year, and last year was slowed by it. He was still recovering from it. So, you know, he's a guy that I think is going to have a really good year. I think Bryce Thornton is going to be really good. I think he's going to get better. And I think Jordan Castile, even though he didn't play in the game as he was out with a little shoulder injury, he's going to improve from last year as well. Sharif Denson had a good game, had an interception in the game as well. Jason Marshall, you know, did what Jason Marshall does, and that's have some really good plays and some plays where you kind of shake your head a little bit. But I think the secondary in general is really, really good and is going to be improved. And I think the defensive line is going to be something that, we know that there's talent there. It's who's going to step up to be, you know, those guys that really get in the rotation. We know Tyreek Sapp can play. We know LJ McCray can play and Kelby Collins and those guys. But who's going to really step up to be that guy on this team? And that'll be a big thing. At linebacker, you know, we didn't see Shamar James and Miles Graham as they're both in black jerseys. But overall, I think that linebacker group's going to be better.
Andrew, as we begin to wrap up, you mentioned the portal. The second wave of the portal is opening this week. You talk about wide receiver. Do you think Florida will be pretty active in the portal here over the next week or two?
I think they will be. You know, I think, you know, contrary to some people or some teams, I think instead of, you know, looking to get some younger guys that hit the portal that aren't getting playing time, I think Florida's going to look for some vets that can come in and help this team next year. You know, I think they're going to look for some pieces maybe on the defensive line, maybe another pass rusher, definitely a receiver or two, maybe an offensive lineman if there's a good one that hops in the portal. They're going to be looking for guys that can instantly improve this team for next year to kind of put them over that hump and, you know, make them a better team. And, I think that you'll see Florida active. And, you know, I think you'll see some guys on this current roster get in the portal as well. I think you'll see some guys that understand – hey, maybe I'm not, the best fit here, or maybe I'm not going to get playing time here, so I'm going to hop in the portal. So I think it'll go both ways.
And the reason why, because spring football is in the rearview mirror, guys kind of know, right? All right, I'm so-and-so on the depth chart. I might need to get out of here. And that's why the portal is very active after spring football wraps up. Andrew, final question. We mentioned the football portal. Well, the basketball portal is open. We know how great Todd Golden was last year in bringing guys in from the portal. He's already started again this year, bringing in another 6'9" guy in the front court.
Yeah, a guy from Apopka, and you know, kind of returns home. Averaged 10 points a game last year. 9 or 10 rebounds a game as well. And, you know, a guy that I think is going to come in and, you know, be able to fill some of that gap that Zion Poulin's going to leave there. I think we all believe Walter Clayton will be back. And so he'll be, able to come in and be a counterpart to Clayton. And, I think Todd Golden has a couple of pieces that he's looking for. And this one was a big one. He needed to find a guard to replace Poulin or try to replace Poulin. You're not going to replace Poulin's output at all, but a guy that was very sought after. A lot of teams were getting in the mix there. And I think it's a big pickup, and a guy that comes back home and plays for his home state.
Oh, I love that. And then finally, I mean, you look at Golden, his MO, right, is the portal. We talk about Mike Norvell in the portal for Florida State football. Todd Golden's kind of becoming that for Florida basketball, is he not?
Yeah, and you know, I hate it in a way because you never get to fully, you know, get to know guys and, you know, follow them throughout their career. But it's where the basketball's going. You know, it's a new roster every year for a lot of teams and a lot of big programs. I mean, you know, you look at Kentucky, they did it forever under Cal where it was the one and done's. Well, this is basically the one and done's as well. And, you know, I think that I speak for most people when I say whatever works. If that's the way it works and you can win, okay, who am I to care? I think Todd Golden would like to have a couple of highly regarded high school players to come in and build around, you know, with the transfers. But his MO is going to be go get the transfers. And, again, why not? You know what you're getting out of transfers that are coming from schools and, you know, especially guys like, you know, from Chattanooga where they were the best player on the team. You know what you're getting from those guys.
Yeah, Sam Alexis, 11 points, 9 rebounds, 2 blocks last year at Chattanooga as he makes his way the first portal player now for the 2024 Florida basketball team. Andrew Spivey, GatorCountry.com. Andrew, I know you're busy, man. Thank you as always. We always encourage Gator fans in Jacksonville to head to GatorCountry.com. You guys do a terrific job, and we'll talk again soon, my friend.
Absolutely, man. Thanks and take care. And by the way, I hope to see your magic in the playoffs.
Yeah. Now, I know you're an Atlanta Hawks guy, so you guys are in the play-in. But Orlando being the 5 seed, it's nice to be back in the playoffs, Andrew. It's been a while. Best of luck to your Hawks moving forward as well, bud.
Thanks, bud. We'll talk to you soon.
And thank you to Andrew Spivey, GatorCountry.com, for joining us tonight here on Hacker After Dark as the Gators put the finishing touches on their spring football calendar with the orange and blue game this past Saturday. Again, DJ Lagway. Look, a lot of people were impressed by what he did. Keep in mind, nothing more than a glorified scrimmage. Obviously, the defense did not have any ill intentions when it came to the freshman quarterback. But make no mistake about it, this is Graham Mertz's football team. It will be his football team. Billy Napier, obviously, a lot of pressure on him heading into 2024. And I'll continue to say it. And again, you know, I hope I'm wrong. For the Gators' sake, I hope I'm wrong. Because sometimes schedules in April can look ridiculously hard, but they do not materialize once you get to September and October due to injuries or poor performance or what have you. But as we sit here in the middle part of April, looking ahead to this Gator football schedule in September, October, and November, I mean, are you kidding me? Can you ever remember, as a Florida Gator fan, can you ever remember on paper a tougher schedule than what Florida has in front of them in 2024? I can't. Again, I've been following Gator football. I'm 40 years old. I go back in the memory banks, probably 1990 is my deepest memory, when I was, you know, six, turning seven, of Florida football. And in that time, 3.5 decades, I can't remember a tougher schedule on paper. I think ESPN.com put out their way too early preseason top 25 a month or so ago. 9 of Florida's 12 opponents were on that thing. 9 of them. Absolutely insane. So it looks like it's the perfect storm, right? Coach on the hot seat, fans wanting wins, combined with maybe the toughest schedule in program history. We'll see. We're going to let it all play out. That's the beauty of sports. We can speculate and we can assume, but obviously reality will come in September and October when the Gators kick off, I guess actually in the end of August, right? August the 31st is their first game. And what a gigantic game that is when Mario Cristobal, who, by the way, needs a win as well, when Miami goes to Gainesville, two teams starting the year, year three coaches that desperately need that victory to kick off the 2024 season. Well, that'll just about do it. It has been a very busy Tuesday night edition of Hacker After Dark. We've been in for Blue tonight here on 1010XL and on 92.5 FM. We have a ton of people to thank. Again, my buddy Andrew Spivey, go check him out and his terrific work at GatorCountry.com. Thank you to David Steele, the longtime play-by-play voice on Bally Sports of the Orlando Magic. As for the first time in 4 years, Orlando has won the Southeast Division in the NBA. They are in the NBA playoffs. They will begin Saturday afternoon as the 5 seed, taking on the Cleveland Cavaliers. Interestingly enough, Orlando and Cleveland have only played one other time in a playoff series, and you got to go back to 2009 and the Eastern Conference Finals, a series that Orlando won, by the way, in 6 games, although the only thing people really remember about that series is LeBron James' buzzer beater there in Game 2. Orlando dominated that series. Probably should have beat Cleveland in 5 if not for the LeBron James buzzer beater. But nevertheless, the second time ever, Orlando and Cleveland in a playoff series. That'll tip off Game 1 Eastern Conference first round on Saturday. And we appreciate David Steele for taking time out for us tonight here on Hacker After Dark. And back in hour number one, Emory Hunt. You see him on CBS Sports HQ. He is the founder of Football Game Plan. One of the biggest, most comprehensive draft guides you will find is the Football Game Plan Draft Guide. I strongly recommend you guys go check that out. Again, Emory does a great job with that website, with scouting players. He has hundreds of player profiles in that draft guide. And we appreciate Emory talking Jaguars and talking draft with us this evening. We will be back tomorrow night on a Wednesday, and we will do it all over again here on Hacker After Dark, beginning at 8 o'clock. Dylan Denmark was your producer tonight. Dylan, great job as always. I'm the hacker, Ryan Green. And again, Jacksonville, thank you for spending part of your Tuesday evening with us right here on Hacker After Dark on 1010XL and on 92.5 FM. So for all of us here on HAD, have an absolutely terrific remainder of your Tuesday evening, and we will talk to you again tomorrow night on a Wednesday, beginning at 8 o'clock. Until then... Good night, Jacksonville.